Hey Josh, welcome all those on the interweb.
Yes.
Welcome.
Interwebs.
I wanna talk about peace today. But to start, I would like to read a proverb. And Proverbs 12:20. Okay, let's see, Proverbs 12:20, this is, I really love this, it is, wait, 2012, you guys, I'm sorry, I do that, I'm actually, 12:20 is another one that I'm reading later, but this one is 12:20, thank you very much, no, 2012, I think I might be dyslexic, I don't know, 2012, okay. So it says, lovers of God have been given eyes to see with spiritual discernment and ears to hear from God. Other versions will say, it is God who gives ears to hear and eyes to see. I would like us to open our hands up as in receiving that God would give us ears to hear and eyes to see. I truly believe that he speaks to all of us. And so during this time, your contributions are well welcome, right? So let's pray. God, we thank you so much. You are the one that gives us eyes to see and ears to hear. We receive from you eyes and ears to see what you're doing and to hear what you're saying. In Jesus' name. Okay, so now I turn to Proverbs 12:20. Thank you. 12:20. Proverbs 12:20. Okay. Deception fills the hearts of those who plot harm, but those who plan for peace are filled with joy. It's pretty cool. There's promises laced all throughout the Bible. Those who plan for peace are filled with joy. Who wants joy? We've talked about joy, right? It is like this powerful force, you know? Yeah. Next verse I'm going to read is Matthew 5:9. Most of you are very familiar with it. The Sermon on the Mount. This one is, blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Wonder about what that means. What do you guys think it means to be called a child of God? Like, not just by him, but other people will notice that we're children of God. And why? Because, and why is that fit in with blessed are the peacemakers? I think that peacemaking, I think I mentioned this in the past, but sometimes we confuse peacekeeping with peacemaking. And there's a way to look, there's godly wisdom and worldly wisdom. Worldly wisdom says, it's the rational mindset that says I cannot grieve and I cannot have joy together, right? That's, worldly wisdom says you cannot. God says, I will give you joy in the midst of your grief. So you get to hold two things that have a hard time kind of coming together sometimes. Peace, we define peace as like, I mean, peace between countries, no war, right? Or peace within a heart, like where in a sense we might even like define it as like no conflict, right? But to achieve peace, oftentimes we have to go through conflict. The definition of peace, there's a few ways to define it. One, to be one, to be whole, right? So all of the parts of us are working together. My mind is in agreement with my heart. My heart's in agreement with my soul. My soul's in agreement with my spirit. Everything is working together in harmony. And so peace is not necessarily the absence of conflict, though the conflict, as we surrender to the process, is easier. So, like, conflict would be, like, recognizing that you have an issue with pride. Because isn't a humble man going to have more peace in his life? The way that God establishes things, right? And he shows us, he says, this path. And we'll read more stuff, and it's going to point to all of this. But to think about peace, it requires something from us. And to be called a child of God means we actually look like God. Children, that whole thing is like, children look like their father and their mother. So God is a peaceful God. And so when we make peace, in other words, we enter into situations, not to just keep peace. We're not trying to, like, we don't keep our mouth shut, but, like, there is, like, quarrel and strife, and we're peacemakers. We can enter into a situation. Right? For brothers, for sisters, for one another. So I really think that's really beautiful. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. John 14:27, this is during a discourse that lasts for chapters. You know, it's the passion that is shown, the passion. So the process where Jesus goes into the garden and then, you know, the Garden of Gethsemane, he dies on the cross, he's risen again. There's this procession that's called the passion. And in John, he has these conversations with his disciples that are extremely poetic and beautiful. A lot of it is him talking about being one with him, with his father. So he's talking about peace with him, being one, tied together, knitted together. In John 14:27, go there. He's telling them what's going to happen, and that he's going to go away. And they're kind of starting to freak out because they're starting to get close to it. So even if they don't understand, they're starting to feel that the Jesus they know will not be with them. But he says to them, I leave the gift of peace with you, my peace, not the kind of fragile peace given by the world, but my perfect peace. Don't yield to fear or be troubled in your hearts. Instead, be courageous. So peace takes on, like, it's really, you know, a lot of the things of God are really hard to put into a, like, solid box. Peace within us, peace with each other. I like the term harmony. In music, you play a single note and you get a note, right? But when you play a chord, multiple notes go together to create something more beautiful than just a single note. And when people sing, why is it called a harmony? Because somebody else is singing a different note that coincides with it. And has anybody listened to, like, a choir, right? And there's, like, these layers of harmonies. And it just, like, starts to become angelic, like, right? That's harmony. That's a form of peace. Everybody's working together, singing different notes. So, like, peace doesn't have to be, like, I agree with everything you're saying, but I walk with you, and I'm in agreement with you. It's a different thing, right? It's like we can disagree on levels and be able to discuss it with one another and still be in peace. So harmonies, that's a beautiful thing. I sing a C, and Josh sings an E, and somebody else sings a G, and we got a chord, and we got harmonies. In James chapter 3, verse 18, I think this is really beautiful. There it is. James chapter 3, verse 18. I read this a couple weeks ago when I spoke about wisdom. When I talked about, like, a table, and in Proverbs it talks about, you know, that wisdom has a almost like a persona. And the reason why it gets a persona, it's because it's almost like we're invited into this romance with wisdom. Right? And so, and I read this part, and so I'm going to reread it because it looks at something specific that I really love about peace. It says, but the wisdom from above is always pure, filled with peace, considerate and teachable. It is filled with love and never displays prejudice or hypocrisy in any form, and it always bears the beautiful harvest of righteousness. Good seeds of wisdom fruit will be planted with peaceful acts by those who cherish making peace. It's like peace is like. There's another, I'm trying to think, that's in the Passion. I'm going to read, this is going to be from, I believe, the NIV version. It says, peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness. I almost like that better. It's just kind of just simple and very poetic. I was wondering about how to define righteousness, you know? What does peace do to, like, the landscape? Like, if we write a poem about what peace is, what does it do to the landscape? Because when you write a poetry about, say, I'm going to talk about peace, but I'm going to write a poem about the mountains, right? Something like that. I'm going to tell you, because the Bible is poetry. I'm getting there. Proverbs 21:4, if you want to. I may be turning a little bit too fast, so if you write it down for later, or you can just listen, just listen. 21:4, this talks about the soil in a person's heart. So it says, arrogance, superiority, and pride are the fruits of wickedness, and the true definition of sin. There's actually like a definition of sin in the Bible, can you believe that? I don't like to talk about sin a lot, but it's a real thing. And sometimes we need to like recognize some of the things that might be hang-ups in our hearts that keep us from entering into peace. So arrogance, superiority, and pride are, in another wording, the plowing of the wicked. And the true definition of sin. All right, so now I'm going to go to Luke. We're doing a lot of scripture today. Does anybody have anything they want to chime in on? We're talking about peace. I'm kind of like going through the forest a little bit with it. We're on a hike.
Yeah.
I just want to add that as we as Christians together, that God's always with us. His presence, His peace is always with us. Mm-hmm. And as we walk into a room, that peace should affect other people. And the love that we have from Him should affect others as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think there's always two sides to the coin where the grace is God does it for us. We just say yes, God does it. We get peace. I can get peace in the midst of like even sin, right? In the midst of sin, I can say, God, I need you, and I can get peace. It's incredible. God's love is bigger than how I would like to box him in sometimes. But then you flip the coin and he says, but I'm going to show you how to sow peace. I'm going to show you how to make peace. I'm going to show you how to cultivate soil. Right? And so God does it all for us, and then he says, but walk with me. Luke chapter 3, if you want to turn there with me. So, I'm actually... Can somebody, Luke chapter 3, verses 4 through 6. I like it in here, but somebody, does somebody have the NIV version, or somebody has another version?
I have NESV.
Let's do it. Let's read it. Do you want to read 4 through 6?
Okay. As it is written in the book of words of Isaiah the prophet, the voice of one crying in the wilderness, make ready the way of the Lord, make his path straight, every ravine will be filled, and every mountain and hill will be brought low. The crooked will become straight, and the rough road smooth. And all flesh will see the salvation of God.
That's cool. That's John the Baptist quoting Isaiah, basically saying, this prophecy is being fulfilled before you right now. John the Baptist was to pave a way for Jesus. But part of what he's saying is, I'm paving a way, but he will fulfill this. right? So if you go to Isaiah chapter 40, verse 3 through 5, it is the same thing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years before. Well, how much? I asked you. How much? Isaiah is a contemporary of Micah. Chayton, do you know what the... What was the generation for Isaiah?
It was when Samaria was getting invaded by the Assyrians. And so it was like a whole takeover. And the difference between Isaiah and him is, and Micah is that Isaiah was in the courts, mm-hmm. and Micah was from like a really small, remote village. So yeah. He was an outsider trying to come in.
Yeah.
And then in chapters 1, 3, and 6, which were like the main overarching like stories in Micah, he uses the word listen. That Hebrew version of listen is Shema, which is the same prayer in Deuteronomy that the Hebrews were supposed to say every morning and every night. Mm. And it's the listen, O Israel. It's the whole verse about like the love the Lord with all your heart, all your mind.
Right.
But Shema is more than just listening. It's listening, but understanding to 100%. So it's like a really like complex word. And so the fact that Micah was using that was like, hey, this is from God. And he also like prophesied against like the downfall of his own city, like the village that he was from.
Yeah.
So that was like a big deal. So the fact that he was able to end up getting the attention of some of the kings was like a really big deal, because he wasn't in the courts, he was just some dude.
He was a country preacher.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
So you have the guy who's like in the political realm, which was Isaiah, and then you have the dude that was just like walking around the wilderness and telling everybody in the towns rather than like the higher ups. So it was like the main people and then just like your average day person.
It's cool. Mike is like a normal dude.
Yeah.
That was not that normal.
Yeah.
Some of their protests were nakedness. So, like, to make a point, they would show up and, like, preach naked. Guys, that would not fly right now. But pretty crazy. And they listened to God. They were doing what God was calling them to do because they needed to get people's attention, and that was one way to do it.
So
John the Baptist is saying, I have come. I am fulfilling a prophecy from the word of Isaiah, right? And Jesus is going to, right? I am paving the way, and he's going to fulfill it. So he talks about the kingdom. He's talking about the kingdom coming. In Luke 17, 20 through 21, the question gets asked Jesus. A Pharisee, maybe, one of the religious leaders, asked Jesus. He says to him, where will I find the kingdom? And Jesus says to him, God's kingdom realm does not come simply by obeying principles or waiting for signs. The kingdom is not discovered in one place or another. For God's kingdom realm is already expanding within some of you. This is where this phrase comes from. The kingdom of heaven is within you. Everybody point into them. Put your finger at your chest, point into you. Kingdom of heaven is within you. This says a few things. I don't have to go very far to find it. And I have great responsibility because I carry the kingdom of God. So Jesus invites people in this incredible responsibility, but then also shows them how to do it and leaves his Holy Spirit with us so that not only are we not doing it alone, but we're doing it with God's power. Like, I don't do it alone because I got all you guys. That's pretty awesome. But I also don't do it alone. And that's like power. So the kingdom of heaven is within you. That's a new gospel. that's a fresh gospel. I want to start reading through a few passages in Micah, because I'm drawn to this. I think it's beautiful. I want to say something and it'll come up. Micah prophesies a number of very accurate things. one, he's the only prophet that prophesies the place of Jesus' birth. Kind of like that about him. Like, he cared enough to hear God say where. Like, not just, like, calling people to repentance because he did that and declaring all of these other things, but he's like, and this is where Jesus, this is where the coming Messiah is going to be born. Because when Jesus was born there, that marked something that said, he is the Christ. Prophecies were for a reason, foreshadowing for a reason. So we can actually believe what God says. It helps us. Like, right? God doesn't just say, just trust me. He says, no, I laid it all out.
Yeah.
I showed you along the way. And if we have a problem with the Bible, in some ways, some people have a problem with the Bible. The fact is some of the things are marked in history by non-Christian historians. Go search on the internet Josephus. Read about Josephus. He was a historian in the Roman camp watching Jerusalem, writing about what was happening. And his records point and answer a lot of questions from a perspective that is not a Christian perspective. That's pretty cool. Why do we need peace? I want to open up some dialogue before I start reading through the Micah passages. Why do we need peace? Why do we want peace? What does peace do for us? Oh, very, a lot of questions there. Pick one. If something sticks, stands out for you, right?
Peace gives us, allows us the opportunity to rest.
I think it also helps us to connect with Him, so we can hear Him better.
Mm-hmm. I think it's hard to hear somebody in conversation in chaos.
Yeah.
Chaos is not peace. Rest, quietness.
I think it's also like you need, if you want to do something right, sometimes you need to take a break from it, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like working out. If you're doing sets and reps, you're taking a rest period in between each, because if you want to get the volume, you have to take a rest, or you're not going to be able to complete the mission. So I think that's like one of the things about what makes the Sabbath special, right? Is like taking that day of rest so that you can continue to be. Start the cycle all over again, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier, you were talking about peace's harmony.
Yeah.
And how that lets us discuss with one another. Even when our points of views aren't exactly the same, it lets us discuss.
Absolutely.
You know, in a civil manner.
Yeah. And,
you know, that's how we learn.
Yeah.
Right? So without that peace, you know, it's hard to have that learning. And learning is how we grow.
Totally.
In Him.
Yeah. Yes, thank you. Yeah, I think that there's a lot of problem. Like, we see a lot of things in the news, discourse, disagreements, warfare, right? Unpeace, unrest. And a lot of it is because people are unwilling to sit down and say, I don't have to agree with you to make a song. Right? That's the start, right? I don't have to agree with you. I need to find a place to start. Because, like, not all notes work the same together, right? If you understand music, you can't play certain notes with other notes because it just won't, like, work. So, like, everybody adjusts a little bit to get inside of, like, the key. And then you can play any key in that scale and it will sound good. Some will sound better, but all of them will be okay, right? And so sometimes we need to adjust a little bit, right? Find the common ground. And that's hard to do. And I think it's pride in man that keeps people from doing that. The need to be right. I need to be right. Right? That's what causes most problems in my life.
In the Hebrew, the word for peace means wholeness. And so all parts working together as a whole.
Yep.
So, you know, if you're a community working together as a whole, but also in yourself, allowing all parts of who you are to be able to function in a healthy way, to make a whole, is peace. When we're only going off of like just the way we're thinking, or just the way we're feeling, or just the way, you know, different things or different senses, but we're not taking as a whole person, processing as a whole person, then we'll be off. You know, so if we go, the pendulum swings too far in one area of who we are, and we're not using our whole selves and our whole connection with God, then we're missing something. We're not a whole person. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that the one word is like wholeness, and then I like that it said in the definition of peace, one. And that's wholeness. We're one. We're also all very different in some ways. Even though we're all much the same, we're also all very different, you know? So it's cool. All parts. So I think that there's a place where we go peace within ourselves, peace with each other. But I really think that what Jesus does when he says the kingdom of heaven is within you, he's not diminishing the importance of having peace with others. He's saying peace starts within you. The most important things that we want to do in society need to begin inside of us. Yeah. I can't have peace with others if I don't have peace with myself. If I have this much peace, I can't have more peace out of that, right? We have to have some level of peace to have peace with others. The more peace I can have within myself, the more capacity I have to have peace with others. And I think that would go with anything that Jesus teaches about. That if you're not cultivating it within yourself, you truly can't cultivate it in a group, a community, a society. And that's that people constantly try to skip over that. The hardest work that we can do, and this is why I say the pathway to peace is conflict in some ways, is because we need to face the things in ourselves that are keeping us from peace. And oftentimes, like I said, I would say pride is usually a hang-up for most of us. But then there's other things that are a hang-up that keep us from peace. And oftentimes we don't want to address it because it's hard. So it requires some form of conflict. The beautiful thing is forgiveness is so readily available. Jesus, like, lays it out on the table. And the things that we struggle with, like, say, pride, and I say, forgive me, Lord. He says, I have forgiven you, but now you've received my forgiveness. So I get to take his forgiveness, and his forgiveness causes this grace thing to happen in my heart, and I get softened, and I get to learn how to be more humble instead of so prideful. And then the next day, I maybe have to say the same prayer. But we, in transformation, right, we're constantly transforming if we step into it, if we say yes to it. Doesn't take a huge yes, little yes. Let the little yes grow a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger. Is anybody else? I want to give opportunity for people to speak about peace.
I just wanted to add that I think Jesus says you'll become more love for one another. And I think peace is a big part of that. Mm-hmm. I think it'll be hard to love one another if we don't have peace.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's hard to love. It's hard to love you. I mean, we're called to love our enemies, but we can't expect them to love us that way, right? So, like, to love each other, yeah. I'm gonna read through some passages in Micah. It's funny. I'm just now remembering. I knew this. I still know him. I just haven't talked to him in a while in California. There's this guy Micah, and he was like this really amazing father, like open-hearted, opened his home to people, like an incredible husband. I worked with him in some respects, but I went to church with him for a while, and it was just somebody that I just wanted to be around. And I remembered him right now, thinking about that. So I'm going to read you some passages. Micah 4, 1 through 4. God uses poetry to help us understand things. There's literalness in poetry. Also, he wants to teach our hearts things. Right? I think poetry helps actually tie our brains together with our hearts. It causes a sense of peace in us if we listen to it. It says, in the last days, The mountain of the Lord's temple will be established as chief among the mountains. It will be raised above the hills, and peoples will stream to it. Many nations will come and say, "Come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways, so that we may walk in his paths." The law will go out from Zion, the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. He will judge between many peoples and will settle disputes for strong nations far and wide. They will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not take up sword against nation, nor will they train for war anymore. Every man will sit under his own vine and under his own fig tree, and no one will make them afraid, for the Lord Almighty has spoken. I love it. It's like the plowshare is the part of the plow that is a very sharp edge that digs into the ground. So literally it's taking a sword and making it into a tool to till soil. What do you guys hear when I read that? I really love the part where it's plowshares and talks about spears and pruning hooks. And anyways, what do you guys hear when I read that? It is Micah chapter 4, 1 through 4.
Well, it sounds like there's peace on the earth. There's mm-hmm. no fighting anymore. You don't have to be afraid. So you don't need a sword. You're just going to use it for good.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. This is, let's say something about prophecy. A lot of this stuff, and we're gonna get to where he prophesies Bethlehem being the birthplace of the Christ, right? The cross. Jesus's 30-year life in the cross is the central point for the whole Bible. So all the foreshadowing and stuff points towards Jesus. And everything afterwards points back at him. And so when you hear about a world of peace, Micah is prophesying about the kingdom that's coming. The kingdom that Jesus brought. I love this part. Every man will sit under his own vine and under his own fig tree. Does that sound nice? Rest, right? Just sitting down, eating your own grapes, eating some figs.
And when you were asking, like, what the word peace meant to you, and I was thinking about that, it's a feeling of safety inside, of security, and then this talks about that no one will make them afraid. There is no fear. Mm. You know? And
For sure. It's good.
It kind of speaks of community too. You know, when you're in a like a really tight community, you don't have to fear your neighbor, right? Mm-hmm. When you're in a dangerous neighborhood, you might need something because you don't know the intentions of someone next to you. Mm-hmm. So to me, it kind of speaks to like knowing almost the intent of the person next to you, that it's not for harm, that I can put my guard down because I don't have to worry about what my neighbor's going to do to me, because we have some kind of community and understanding that we all have enough. And so that's what it kind of
reminds
me of too when I was thinking about that.
That's cool. That's good. I like that. Yeah, it really doesn't just speak. It speaks to here, but it speaks to here. And not just in this room, but like where we live, right? And in chapter 5, Micah says, "But you, O Bethlehem, Ephrathah, though you are small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel, whose origins are from of old, from ancient times." That's a prophecy about Christ coming. In other words, somebody who comes later will have been from old. That's speaking about God. God's the only one that does that. that was and is to come. So he's speaking about God coming. He's speaking about Emmanuel. I love that they're contemporaries. So when I read from Isaiah, Isaiah's probably in the courts prophesying this. Well, Micah is in the countryside prophesying the birthplace, right? Isaiah says, does somebody want to turn here to Isaiah 9:6? First come, first serve, if you get it. What's that? Oh, snap. Anybody got it?
Are you going to be reading back in Micah?
Yeah, we will go back to Micah. What's that?
For unto us a child is born. Unto a, yeah, that's an answer.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, that's
for good. Unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given. The government will be upon his shoulder, and his name will be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace.
It's good. That's Isaiah has a lot of prophecy about Jesus, and that one is a great one because we hear that in Christmas songs, we hear that in Christmas movies, right?
I was really close. 9:6. Thank you.
The end of like these wonderful things that says about who Jesus is going to be. The end is Prince of Peace. That's the final thing in that, like. I mean, Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. The contemporary in the courts, and Micah in the countryside, and they're both talking about Jesus' coming. And then in Micah 6:6-8, I bet a lot of you have heard this before. I wonder how many people know it's from Micah, because I don't know if I did until this point. So I'm going to read Micah 6:6-8. This question is posed, with what shall I come before the Lord? What shall I bring the Lord? And bow down before Mighty God. Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, with 10,000 rivers of oil? Shall I offer my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? These are sacrifices. Should I offer a young cow? Should I offer rivers of oil? What does God ask of me? Right? The heart that says, God, what do you ask of me? He has showed you, O man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, and to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. It's so much simpler. Right? He even lives in a time where what is established in the current covenant is a sacrificial system. Except for God says, this covenant, he's saying, he speaks to the covenant, this covenant will not last forever. So, we talk about covenants, and I think it's important to say this, because when we read from the Old Testament, we're seeing through the lens of an old covenant. The old covenant exists. This is what God's people asked for. So it's hard to understand sometimes of why God would have certain levels of punishment, because God was adhering to a covenant that the people said they wanted with him. But the covenant that Jesus brings is a different covenant. And God speaks even into ancient times before Jesus comes about the covenant. This is what I ask of you. Because people can step outside of these other covenants and have a relationship with God, but it's so much harder before you get to see who Jesus was. And before Jesus says, and it's like at the Last Supper where he says, take the cup of the new covenant. This is my blood of the new covenant. In other words, we get to enter into this new covenant, total freedom, filled with grace, and it's the same thing. What does God ask of us? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. These are just characteristics of God. For us to have a relationship with God, grow is his nature. And I was reading that, and that right there is a pathway into peace. Because if I love mercy, I will not repay somebody for what they've done to me. I will forgive them. Which means it's no longer going to be a system where everybody's trying to pay somebody back. So when somebody does something wrong to me, mercy means all society continues to raise up in a level of love, peace. Swords into plowshares, spears into pruning hooks. Everybody gets to sit under their own fig tree and figs, and you can come sit underneath my fig tree, but we all got vines and fig trees because it's a fruitful land, and I don't have to be afraid of my neighbor because I love mercy and I act justly. When I see things crooked, I fight to do the right thing to make it straight. And to walk humbly with your God means, God, you know best. I'm listening. Anything you guys want to add? Anything you guys are thinking about? I'm going to end the recording. All you folks out there, muchos love, and good night.